Turn with me in your Bibles, grab onto your Bibles and turn to the book of Proverbs. Let's just go to Proverbs 22. That's where we're going to start. Most of our lesson will come from the book of Proverbs this morning. As we get rolling, I want to begin by thanking our visitors who are here with us. We do that frequently, but we want you to know that we are grateful that you are here. That you've decided to come here and to be with us is a treasure for us to know and to understand that there are those in this world who sincerely have an interest in spiritual things. For the members who attend and worship here, we offer our bodies to God daily as a living sacrifice in service to Him. We believe that it is our reasonable service to sacrifice our lives to the will of God. And we hope and pray that as you're here with us this morning, you will see that in us, in our worship services, the way that we treat one another, and most importantly, the way that we treat you. Thank you for your visit. We're glad to have you with us. Psalm 127 and verse 3 tells us, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." That is an awesome, awesome Bible verse. Children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. And that is so true when they are born to us, coming into our families, into our lives. Grandmothers and grandfathers are excited that the children are coming. These babies are coming. There's a lot of excitement around that. We are really, really looking forward to the time when these children come into our homes. And they are so cute. Babies are undeniably cute. And you know what I've learned is the Lord does that on purpose so we don't kick them out too soon. He wants us to see them, to look at them, spend time with them while they're cute and get used to having them in the home, and then we can't get rid of them. And it really is a trick from Him. You know, babies, when they're born, they do not exude body odor. Now, they exude odor, but not body odor. But when they get older, things change. Babies don't have bad breath. You ever smelt a baby's breath? It is really an amazing thing because you think this is going to be horrible, and then you smell their breath and it does not stink. It's because they don't have any teeth, I've been told. So when the teeth come in, that's over, and you learn to love them still. Babies are inherently very, very selfish. They come with the ability to communicate things to their parents and call their parents at any given moment. And so as that happens, as babies cry out for their parents, the parents show up, the children are learning something about life, about their parents, about the noises that their parents respond to. Scientists have looked at this, and they know that it's true. Babies are adapting and learning just as quickly as we are. And then they grow into toddlers. They have their own laws that they live by, and they are completely surprised when their laws of life are broken. I want to give you the property laws of a toddler and see if you can look at these and agree with me. These are absolutely right on. Law number one for toddlers: if I like it, it's mine. If it's in my hand, it's mine. If I can take it from you, it's mine. If I had it a little while ago, it's mine. If it looks just like mine, it's mine. Number six, if I saw it first, it's mine. If it's mine, it must never appear to be yours in any way. I like that one. If it's mine, it must never appear. You can't even hold it. Don't touch it. Don't look at it. It's mine. Number eight, if I'm building something or doing something, all of the pieces are mine. Number nine, if you're playing with something and you put it down, it automatically becomes mine. And number 10, the best of all, if it's broken, it's yours. That is the property laws of a toddler. And that's really what we see and experience as they grow up. And they have this inherent desire, this selfish nature about them. We work with them, we work through that with them, and we begin to teach them what life is truly all about. And so the lesson title this morning is "The Way He Should Go." Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." This lesson, this verse, obviously very special, very important to me as a father. I brought this lesson 14, 15 years ago when my boys were toddlers, and I studied the scriptures and I knew how to raise a kid by the Bible, and so I taught it. And I've learned a lot since then. I've especially learned to be more humble about this, to say, every child is different. Did you read the text with me? Train up a child in the way he should go. Every child is different. There's a responsibility for parents to look at this child and to begin to understand how they work. What motivates them? What are they afraid of? What do they like? Because you can have a child, your first child, who loves chocolate ice cream. And so you think as a parent, well, we'll just have chocolate ice cream then. Second child comes, they want strawberry, and they don't like chocolate ice cream. How can that be? They're from the same gene pool. Well, because they're different. And so in the way he should go. We're watching this child. We recognize what they respond to and how they respond, and we begin to work in that way. Now, it's the way they should go based on what God has said. The whole book of Proverbs tells us that. It is the way that the child should go. That's understood. It is God's will. But there's also an important requirement for us to examine this child, to understand who they are and what God has brought to us into our lives as a gift, and begin to train them in the way they should go. What does it mean to train? Anyone been in training before? Military training? If you have a doctor and you're going to go into open heart surgery, you want to know that they've had some training, right? And what's that training include? Is it just a few hours of study a week? Do you want them to slack off when they went to school and not really pay attention to the rules of heart surgery? No, we know what training is. We want them to know what they're doing. And not only that, we want the very best, the most qualified, because it's my heart. This is important to me. And so training means something to us. It's not that if you have kids, just let them figure it out. That's not it. We are to train. We are to teach them. We are to give them skills that will give them a hope in this life, to contribute to society in a way that would be well-pleasing to God. That's going to take work. They need us. They need our oversight. They need our help. Train up. We don't want to abandon that idea as we go through the rest of the lesson. We are to train, to give ourselves over to this work, and to dedicate everything we say and do for their good. It's hard. It's very hard. Train up a child in the way that he should go. Look at Proverbs 22:15 with me. We'll just take in some passages from the book of Proverbs on how to do this. Proverbs 22:15 says, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him." Now again, we're monitoring each child. There is a basic truth about children, that foolishness, and it's really just unaware of reality, gravity, things that affect our lives. Children don't know about that, and so foolishness is bound up in their heart. And we want to use the rod of discipline or correction to keep them from hurting themselves, or heaven forbid, even killing themselves. I believe, now I've never raised a girl, but I believe girls are easier in this sense. The rod is less necessary because boys are inherently crazy. They do things that make no sense, and they do try to kill themselves often. Boys will stick their head into things that they, I don't know how they got it in, but they can't pull it out. Boys will jump off of things that are way too high and way too unsafe. Boys take trash can bags and jump off the roof of their house thinking that the parachute will work. Girls don't know what that's all about. You know, girl, that's not how girls work. So we want to train them in a way that demonstrates our love and our care for them, but also to protect them and to save them. There is foolishness at some level. This is a principle. There's foolishness at some level that's bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction is to drive that out. Mom and dad aren't going to let that happen in this home. Why? Because mom and dad don't like you? Oh, no, no, it's the opposite. Mom and dad care about you, and that road leads to awful things. And as long as you're under our watch and under our roof, you are not going in that direction. So discipline is required. Dad gets mad. Dad gives spankings. That means I don't want to do that anymore. Dad is leading, right? When we see this, the rod of correction, the rod of reproof will drive that foolishness out of their hearts. Proverbs 29 and verse 15. Proverbs 29 and 15, the rod is mentioned again. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. So there it is again. We're using discipline to place wisdom within the child, understanding of how life works, and that they're responsible for some things. They're going to have to be upright in their behavior, in their character, and in their language. Let a child raise himself and watch mom hang her head in shame. How early does that begin when a mom says, oh, how early? I'm thinking 2-3 years old. You ever seen an unruly kid in a grocery store or at a restaurant when other children are sitting at the table and listening to their parents and some other kid is running around like a wild Indian doing whatever they want and they're in charge of the parents? That they yell it, they demand it, the parents give it? Even in that moment, 2, 3, 4 years old, mom is already, she knows. She doesn't like it, but she knows that this is not acceptable. And she's lost control of her child. Dads, I'm looking to you. Do not let your wife hang her head in shame because you failed to be the father that God has called you to be. Discipline is required. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but discipline is absolutely required. We've seen it in the Proverbs. Proverbs 13 and verse 4, Solomon, the wisest man who has ever lived on the earth. Proverbs 13 and verse 24 says, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Well, that's interesting because we're told these days that if you discipline your son or you use the rod on your son, that you hate your kid. That you're trying to hurt them. Something vicious is in your heart. The Proverbs do not say that. A father who watches his child and disciplines him promptly exhibits love for that child. If he withholds the rod and tells himself, well, I'm one of those better parents that doesn't do that, then that child is left to their own devices. And that child's learning something about dad too, by the way. Dad doesn't care. He's not going to step in. I can do what I want. There is trouble coming. It will always be true. Most people in the world believe that it's wrong to spank a child. And they say to themselves, that can't be love. And I understand why. That aggressive move, the grab of the arm, the discipline with the belt, it's bad. It's bad. There's no reason not to give them that. But there is a principle of truth that is involved in all of universal humanity. Look at Proverbs 20 and verse 30. It tells us there, lashes and wounds cleanse away evil, as do stripes the inner depths of the heart. That's not even talking about children. That is a general principle of life. Lashes and wounds cleanse away evil. It's not a parent that's giving the lash. It is reality. It's the immutable laws of God that when a human being does something that's wrong, inherently God wrong, or defies the laws that God has put in place, it hurts. We do things sometimes and it hurts and we realize, I don't want to do that again. And so the discipline is there in the very lash or the wound that we receive by our own actions. It is a principle of truth. What we're talking about is a father and a mother in a home who's watching the child, training them up in the way they should go, and giving discipline when necessary. It is controlled. It is from the source of love. A father who loves his son will discipline him promptly. If you have the opportunity to look inside of a godly home, a home where Jesus Christ is king, you will see parents who serve the Lord and live by His rule. In that home, a mother and father's discipline is always administered in love, not out of anger or revenge or a way to relieve stress from work. It is always thoughtfully administered in love. Dads, moms, if you're hitting your children because you're angry or you're stressed out, that is wrong. Discipline is thought through. We know what we will charge them with. We know we'll lay the rules out clearly. And when the rules are broken, the discipline is enforced. It's consistent. It's right. And the rules are clear to the child. Listen, if your child does something that's crazy, but there's never been a rule laid down, it's not right to jump all over them, to tear into them, or to spank them for something they haven't yet understood. What is right is to say, here's the rule. We didn't realize you'd do something that crazy, son, so here's the rule. And do you understand the rule? And then they say, yes. Okay, we're going to move forward. the rules understood. They know the measure of discipline that will be administered, and so do I. And so when it happens, we do that. Now, that's thoughtful, it's done with love, and it's done with great purpose. Why? Because we're training. We are training them up in the way that they should go. No chastening is joyful in the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Hebrews 12 and verse 11. It's not joyful, it is painful, but it yields something, the peaceable fruit of righteousness. It has an effect that we want it to have. Look at Proverbs 23 and verse 13. We'll take a section of passages that deal with this for us. Proverbs 23, beginning in verse 13. Proverbs 23:13, do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. Why is that? Because it's being done with love. We're monitoring all of this. He's not going to die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. You see how serious that is? Why do you spank your kids? Because I don't want them to go to hell. And I do it in a way that's right and appropriate, and I oversee every step of that because I'm their father, and no one loves them more on this earth than me or their mother. And I do it the right way, but they are not going to be unruly. They are not going to disrespect their mother, and they are not going to break the rules of our home because that's the way life works, and that's what God expects. If you beat him with a rod, you deliver his soul from hell. Verse 15, my son. Now the father, turning to the son, he says to him, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself. Think about the disciplining father now. Another moment in time. He's not hitting him with a rod. He's turning to him and he's saying, my son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself. That is so true. If I watch my son walk in wisdom and do what's right and to say the things that are necessary, though they're hard to say, my heart rejoices in that he understands, that he's trying. It's such a great thing. It's not just discipline. It's encouraging them and patting them on the back when they need it. Verse 16, yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. Do not let your heart envy sinners, my son, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. Man, why is it important, Dad, that I walk in wisdom and that I speak things that are right? Because there is a hereafter, and you're accountable to God. Hear, my son, in verse 19, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with winebibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Be careful who you hang out. Evil companions corrupt good morals. Verse 22, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also, wisdom and instruction and understanding. What a great verse to say to your son, to your child, your daughter, buy the truth. Spend whatever you have to spend to get it, and don't ever trade it. Buy the truth and sell it not. That is a beautiful, beautiful statement from a loving father or mother to their precious child. You find the truth, and you protect it with everything that you have. It's an amazing thing to be a parent, to watch children grow, to train them, to watch their successes, and to watch their failures. It's all very, very amazing, and it is an ongoing life experience. A loving parent who is doing their very best to train up their children in the way that they should go should be keenly aware. I want to offer a warning to all of us this morning. You're a loving parent, and you are leading and guiding a Christian home, you should be keenly aware of a serious threat that faces our children and the relationship, not just our children, but the relationship that parents and children have with one another. There's some things we need to know and to understand about this life, the world we live in today. There are more mobile devices on the earth than there are people. How can that be? There are more mobile devices on the earth than there are people. We are aware of more than 7.2 billion active SIM cards working today. That is amazing, and I'll tell you why. There's only 7.5 billion people in the world. We got 7.1 working SIM cards, active mobile devices. That's amazing because 1.1 billion people on the earth don't have electricity. Even if they had a cell phone, they couldn't charge it. So the number far outweighs those who even have electricity. That's 0 to 7.5 million mobile devices in just three decades. We know from the little bit of research we've been able to do that extended use of a mobile device can cause stress, anxiety, and depression. The high levels of anxiety come from the need to stay connected all of the time. Remember, train up a child in the way he should go. We want to monitor these children. What's happening to them? Is this good for my child? Not the rubber stamp. Well, Johnny has one. I could care less what Johnny's doing. Johnny's not my son. You're my son. How is this affecting your life? Is it making an impact on what you're doing with your time? I need to know that. I'm your parent. God has given me charge over you. There is a level of anxiety of this need to stay connected all the time. Parents, you're guilty too. What's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning? What's the first thing you check? What's the last thing you look at when you go to sleep? Many of us have already fallen into this trap. Phone-included anxiety operates on a positive feedback loop, which can only be relieved by looking at the phone and using it. It's been done on purpose. Even when you put the phone down and determine, okay, I'm not going to look at it, our minds are consumed with what we might be missing. A phone call, an important text message, or a notification from an app that we've installed. The phone is constantly crying out to us, and we want to know what it's saying. And it is very dangerous. Studies have proven that mobile devices disrupt sleep patterns. It alters the chemicals that are naturally released into the body through extended use of mobile devices, and it limits the amount of melatonin that the body needs for a good night's sleep. There's chemicals in the daytime that are produced by the body that are also canceled out when you're staring at that screen. Smartphone use significantly weakens our concentration and attention levels. Smartphones impact our social and emotional development. These are the things we know now. They absolutely impact our social and emotional development. Studies that have been done with MRIs, very interesting. You can look into this yourself. Studies that have been done with MRIs are able to follow the levels of brain activity while using a mobile device and while not using a mobile device. For those in these studies who are clinically addicted, proven to be addicted to cell phone use, when they completely stop using their phones for a short time, the MRIs pick up that the brain activity becomes completely normal again. And when doctors explain it, they say the brain heals itself. We need to know that. If I'm constantly looking at that screen and I relieve myself of that, the brain begins to heal itself and they can see the activity of the brain on the MRIs. It's very interesting to look at and to consider. What are the long-term effects? That's an important question. This thing just got here. What are the long-term effects? No one knows. Why? Because they just got here. We do know this, that in three decades of time, the number of mobile devices has gone from 0 to 7.5 billion total. We should be thinking about that very seriously. What does that mean? How is that impacting me? How is that impacting my children? Is it impacting my children? Let's finish with this. Just a single solitary picture. What do you see? What do I see when I look at that? It looks to me that it is a father holding a newborn child. Look at the man in the corner of this photo with his newborn. What in this moment, what are his dreams for this child in this moment? How will their days be spent? What's dad thinking about? We know the baby's not thinking about much just yet. What's dad thinking about? How are we going to spend our days? How will I make this time useful to you and to me? When my first child was born, I remember specifically in the hospital waiting patiently for him to come. It felt like it was a very crushing feeling for me because I had all these words of wisdom, I thought, that I wanted to sit him down and tell him the things I've learned and what I understand, that they'll serve you forever. You'll do well if you know this. And I was thinking about that, but I got to take him fishing. We've got to do sports. He's got to learn how to play basketball for sure. Then football, then baseball. And we've got to do all these events. And it just started coming down on me and felt like a lot of pressure. How can I do all this? How can I do it successfully? I did not like the way it felt. And then I realized it doesn't work that way. It's one day at a time. It's one day at a time that I will decide how to spend my day with my child. It will be with purpose. It will be because Dad believes this is the best thing we can do with our time today. And this father, as he holds this precious child, is not thinking about what iPhone 9 or iPhone 10 he's going to buy for him. He's thinking about the time together. What happened to us? That is an honest and serious question. What happened to us that when we walk into the home or we go to visit relatives that we say, hey, it's good to see you. Then we sit down and pull our phones out of our pockets and we don't look at each other anymore. What in the world? Why is that happening? That's not Dad's dream. It can't be. And yet everyone's content with it. Remember, train up a child. Now, you don't have to. You don't have to. A lot of parents have fallen in love with the idea that school will take care of it. School's going to raise them. You know that's true. That is not what a godly home and a godly family looks like. A godly home and a godly family says, I'm in charge because God says so, and I am not going to let you drift off. I love you, and the demonstration of that love is going to be shown by the disciplinary acts that are taken for your good. Instead of looking at the phone, your children need to know that they need you. Your children need to be bored. Did you hear me? Your children need to be bored. They need to learn how to embrace boredom. We did. They need to learn patience, and they need to learn how to process difficult moments, like failure. They should use their time to learn the life-altering fact that words have meanings, not firing off 800 text messages in 10 minutes. Words have meanings. Think it through. What are you saying? To whom are you saying it? Are you okay with everyone in the world reading that text message? Because it could come to be. It could be copied and pasted and put online. Who's warning our children about these dangers and these things that are going on right before our eyes? Your words should be chosen carefully. They should be spoken wisely. Our children need to be taught how to handle disappointment, and they need to be taught how to handle praise. Both are very difficult. Disappointment and praise are both difficult to handle. Not to Google facts about World War II, but to sit down with a soldier with purpose who lived through it and ask them, what was it like? Google can't do that for you. Not to follow their Google map faithfully in order to get to their destination, but to learn the way by experience, by experiencing that path, establishing landmarks in their minds, knowing when to turn and what street they are on, taking a calculated chance to find a quicker route if possible. That's good for us. Take a shot. I'm going this way, the place I want to go that way. I'm going to take this road. Learn where it goes. It's good for us. The failure of making a wrong turn teaches us something. Hitting the button, hitting the address, and following it faithfully takes something away from us that God wanted us to experience. We have to know this. We can't abandon the truths of life because things are easier now. Our kids need a deep and genuine relationship with their parents. I can't say that enough to you. A deep and genuine relationship with their parents. Continually building that special bond that cannot be broken by the ups and downs of life. Go and work on a project together. Donate your time to help a member of the church or anyone you find who has need. Living by example and not by cheap platitudes. If I say to a mother and father, take your child out and do a project in the garage, you know, find something to do, work on it together, what does the parent immediately think? I know what I think. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I let my son hold a hammer. The project goes haywire. He doesn't hammer nails right. It's a nightmare. Well, that's not why we're doing it. We didn't come out there to build the perfect shelf. We're working with our children. They're watching us they're watching us when we react when I hit myself with a hammer on the thumb. Daddy doesn't cuss. They're not going to learn that about you if you let them stare at their phones while you go out and cut the grass, while you go out and trim the bushes, repair the roof, work on the car. They won't know much about you at all. I want to give you one more thing. Every generation, this is what I've understood so far in my life. Every generation before us has warned us as parents. What's the warning they say to us? What's the one thing every generation later, the earlier generations, what's the one thing they say to parents who now have kids? It's going to go by too fast. Don't blink. That's what they say. Don't blink. They're going to be in college and they're going to be gone and you're going to wonder where the time went. What will we tell the next generation? That's my question for those of us who are raising kids now. What are we going to tell the next generation about how fast our kids grow up, knowing how quickly they grow up before us? I'm begging you, don't let it be this. We were looking at our phones. How horrible to have that short window of time to be something for your child, to show them who you are and who you expect them to be. And the only memory you have is putting your phone on your charger so you could do it a little longer. It's wrong. It's wrong. God's given the parent the charge to raise the child, to discipline them promptly because we love them. That's the lesson for this morning. I hope and pray that it's been encouraging to each one of you and that it is helpful in the future in your lives as we raise up our children and our grandchildren. For those of you who are here and need to respond to the gospel, don't be worried about these things. These are wholesome words of God that show us the way of truth, that build character and integrity in our lives, that make us people of our word, good people who are willing to help, to share, and to love, to forbear, and to suffer long. Children of God know truly what love means. If you want to be a child of God, there's an opportunity for you now. We want you to come forward if you are so inclined. Do it now while together.